As Nancy said, this is Daryl's sermon. We are appreciative that he had it printed and ready to go, and I am simply delivering it. The title is, What Does Jesus Want From Me? A dog looks at you with those big brown eyes, cocks its head to one side, and says to itself, You love me, you feed me, you care for me, you take me for walks, you must be God. A cat looks at you with those piercing green eyes and thinks to itself, You love me, you feed me, you care for me, you pet me, I must be God. Are you a cat person? Are you a dog person? People are different from one another, aren't we? Some of us are morning people. Some of us are night hawks. Some people are optimists. Some are pessimists. Some people are type A personalities, and some are the rest. Some people love to shop at Walmart, and some love to make their way to the bay. There are people who have stockbrokers, and there are people who are perfectly capable to going broke on their own. What kind of person are you? How do you describe yourself? Before us today is a very difficult parable. Maybe the most challenging parable of all. At the heart of the parable is a description of how Jesus differentiates people. Particularly how Jesus will separate people or sift us like wheat when he returns to the earth. This is often referred to as the second coming. Simply put, Jesus is described as dividing us into sheep and goats. Obviously, the idea that we are sheep and goats is allegorical in nature. His original audience was quite familiar with sheep and goats. In Jesus' day, the sheep were more valuable than goats, primarily because sheep had more uses. Keeping of goats and sheep together was quite a common practice. It was a beneficial practice because sheep ate exclusively grass, while goats would indulge in weeds as well as grass. This made for good pasture management. Also, goats sometimes acted as a deterrent against predators, especially billy goats with their horns. Both groups of animals had their challenges in their care. Sheep are notoriously stupid and easily misled. On the other hand, shepherds or herdsmen would often separate out the goats from the larger herd in the evening to get them inside a shelter because they did not handle the cold as well as the sheep did with their wool coats. Interesting that Jesus suggests in the parable that the goats will be led away to a warm place, just as the shepherds did. Jesus is clearly painting a picture to represent a deeper truth. The problem is, what exactly is that deeper truth? Some parts of the parable are clear. It's obvious that Jesus is concerned about the least of these. Specifically, how have we treated them? Have we fed them, clothed them, visited them, welcomed them, and cared for them when they were sick? Straightforward enough, isn't it? Or is it? Who are these least of these? Over the centuries of interpretation, three primary interpretations of the least of these have persisted. First, some old-time dispensational theologians believe that Jesus was concerned with how we Gentiles cared for Jewish people. Have we cared for God's chosen people? Some preachers have even used this text as a way of addressing anti-Semitism. Still others draw on a different tactic, They see the least of these as Jesus' representatives, his disciples. In other words, people will be judged on how they have cared for those who serve Christ as his preachers and missionaries. This idea comes primarily from the part about being in prison. In other words, being arrested and mistreated for the gospel. Prison was a bit different in Jesus' day. People were often locked away awaiting trial. There was no such thing as posting bail. It was up to the person's family or friends to bring food and other necessities to care for them, as the prison did not provide these resources. Without someone to provide for you, you might starve waiting for trial. So were Jesus' representatives being cared for by those among whom they served? Then finally, there is the most popular explanation, that the least of these simply means anyone who is down and out. In other words, folks in which life, for whom life has just simply beat them down. Used this way, often preachers will use this interpretation to seek to guilt people into doing more for the care of the poor. They urge their parishioners to avoid being judged as goats. So which interpretation is it? Maybe it is all three. I wonder, does it really matter? What exactly is Jesus getting at in this parable? The troubling part of this parable, at least as Daryl sees it, is that it would appear that Jesus is suggesting that our salvation, our eternal reward, is based on our works. Hold on a minute. That is so contrary to the gospel message of being saved by grace. Something isn't right. The truth of the gospel is that I can visit millions, feed billions, spend all my time at jails, but that doesn't save me. I will always insist that we are saved by grace. That was what Paul stressed in his letters, and that was what was at the heart of the Reformation. If you want a wonderful explanation of this, check out Hebrews chapter 11. So how then do we reconcile what Jesus is saying in this parable with the idea that works cannot save us? Just like last week, we asked the question, what is Jesus' main point in this parable? It is a bit tricky, maybe, to discern at first, but as soon as it is pointed out to you, it may refocus the parable for you. Did you notice during the sorting process, when the sheep were set to one side and the goats were placed to the other, both groups had the same question. Confronted with whether they fed the hungry, clothed the naked, cared for the sick, welcomed the stranger, or visited the jailed, both groups asked a very profound question. The question on which this parable hangs. When? When, Lord, did we or did we not feed the hungry? Clothe the naked, care for the sick, visit those in prison. Did you notice that? Both the sheep and the goats are oblivious. The sheep are unaware of the good things they had done, and the goats are unaware of their failures to care for the least of these. Don't you find that odd? You would think, I would remember when I helped someone or when I failed to act. Well, maybe not. Are you familiar with one of Aesop's tales? A scorpion and a frog meet on the bank of a stream, and the scorpion asks the frog to carry him across on his back. The frog asks, "How do I know you won't sting me?" The scorpion says, "Because if I do, I will die too." The frog is satisfied, and they set out. But in midstream, the scorpion stings the frog. The frog feels the onset of paralysis and starts to sink, knowing they will both drown, but has just enough time to gasp, "Why?" Replies the scorpion, "It's my nature." Here's Here's a fun fact. A sheep is not a goat, and a goat is not a sheep. They are different. They are distinct in their nature and characteristics. Could it be that Jesus is talking about something more fundamental than my works of charity? I think Jesus is very concerned about my nature, specifically my heart. All of us do things without thinking. Some things in this life we have done so often, it is what? Second nature to us. Jesus is indicating that when we identify with him and follow him, we are fundamentally changed. Our acts of kindness and charity become expressions of our hearts, our very nature. Just as sheep or goats cannot help being what they are, as Christ's people, we cannot help responding to the least of these as Jesus wishes us to. Earlier, you were asked if you were a cat person or a dog person. Are you a Christ person? Is Jesus' nature found in us? Have we adopted the same approach to our neighbors as Jesus has? Have you ever had an experience where someone comes to you and thanks you for something you did to help them out, and you think to yourself, when did I do that? I'm glad I did, but I cannot for the life of me remember doing that. I think it is because you acted as the incarnated Christ to someone else. His presence and nature were operating out of and through you. You did it from the heart, not from your mind. The more this happens, the more we become like Jesus. The more we become sheep and light and salt. However, I would be remiss if I did not point out the danger inherent here. I came across a funny story. Of course you did, Daryl. I did leave one out at the beginning, I will say that. About a man who applied for a job at a local zoo. The head zookeeper explained that the only job they had now was to dress up like a gorilla and act like one for the crowds that came through. The zoo's gorilla had recently died, and they had yet to procure a new one. The pay was pretty good, so the man took the job. It was a cushy job, and the man soon loved getting into character, swinging around the gym equipment place for the gorilla. Unfortunately, in his exuberance one day, he swung too hard on the rope swing, and when he let go, he sailed over the wall and landed right in front of a ferocious lion. The man panicked and began to yell for help. Suddenly, the lion spoke up and said, "Be quiet, you'll get us both fired." Not sure how that fits into this parable, but anyway. The point is, you cannot falsify your nature. You cannot pretend to be something you are not. Your true nature will ultimately be revealed. That is what the parable is saying. You can pretend to represent Jesus, but the heart doesn't lie. This is a common theme in the Gospels, and especially in Matthew. Earlier in Matthew 7, in the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus addresses the danger of simply pretending to be his followers. He says, "Not everyone who says to me, 'Lord, Lord,' will enter the kingdom of heaven, but only the one who does the will of my Father in heaven. On that day, many will say to me, 'Lord, Lord, did we not prophesy in your name and cast out demons in your name and do many deeds of power in your name?' Then I will declare to them, 'I never knew you. Go away from me, you evil doers.'" Let's get this straight. The issue before us is not to bully people into doing more for Jesus, whoever the least of these may be. In other words, it is abusive to use this passage to make people feel guilty they didn't give more or do more. After all, we're coming into the season of the year where every charity on the planet tries to make us feel guilty. Jesus is not primarily concerned here about what you do. That may surprise you. Jesus cares not about what you do, but who and whose you are. Has Christ changed your nature? Influenced your heart? Just as the scorpion could not help what he is, can you react to life in a way that shows you are a follower of Jesus? Or at the very least, does his character influence you in a way that you cannot even begin to recognize? Maybe asking Jesus the question of when we clothed the naked and fed the hungry, welcomed the stranger, cared for the sick, and visited those in jail is the wrong question. The better question is, why did I feed the hungry, clothe the naked, care for the sick, welcome the stranger, and visit the jail? What motivated me to such a kindness? Daryl is saying, I am the first to admit that I've dropped the ball on occasion in caring for others, as I am sure we all have. But of primary importance, I think, is that as we grow closer to God in Christ, more of his nature rubs off on us. So the answer to why we did a good thing for someone else comes not out of obligation or guilt, but out of a heart changed by grace. As our hearts change, kindness and love will flow out of us in such abundance we cannot possibly remember every act of charity and mercy. What does Jesus want from us? Simply put, he wants our heart to be like his.